Welcome to the 180 Podcast. You are listening to a teaching of the 180, a new church committed to learning to love Jesus and love like Jesus. Our prayer is that God would use this teaching to help you grow closer to Him and that you would feel moved to join us in person, where you can grow in community with the larger 180 family.
Bienvenue à la balado-diffusion de l'Église 180. Vous écoutez un enseignement de l'Église 180, une nouvelle Église qui s'est engagée à apprendre à aimer Jésus et à aimer comme Jésus. Notre prière est que Dieu utilisera cet enseignement afin de vous aider à vous rapprocher de lui et que cela vous donne envie de vous joindre à nous en personne où vous pourrez vous épanouir au sein de la communauté qu'est la grande famille de l'Église 180.
I'm really looking forward to sharing with you this morning because we've been working through this series on the cross and understanding how God really reveals who He really is through the cross. And, you know, if you've been to this church for maybe several months, you'll see on the stage that our decor changes, you know, kind of with the seasons, whether it's Christmas or spring. But maybe during this series on the cross, you've noticed that we have a cross on the stage. Now, maybe one thing you didn't realize, that cross isn't really there for decoration, right? It's not there for some seasons and not in other seasons, but actually there every week throughout the year, because we understand that it's not just a decoration, it's actually a sign. It's meant to point us to Jesus. It's meant to help us center our understanding, actually of our whole lives, of who God is. I found myself, even as I was listening to the different teachings over the past few weeks, just looking at the cross and just trying to understand it in a deeper way. You know, there's different themes that we went through. We looked at how actually originally the cross would have been a really scandalous sign for the early Christians, right? Because crucifixion was something that Romans did only to the worst of criminals. And the fact that Jesus, our leader, the founder of the Christian faith, you know, that he was crucified in such a vicious and painful way, that would have been a scandal. And it took time for the Christians to understand what had really happened there, that it became the sign of actually hope and the sign of God's love for them. I think even as we reflected it together as a church on the suffering that Jesus went through, I think one thing that came out to me is how much I want to avoid suffering, right? Or I see suffering as kind of an interruption in what God really wants to do in my life, right? So if I ever feel like I'm facing a difficult circumstance, my prayer only always tends to be, can you make this end really soon? God, can this be over really quickly? Rather than saying, God, what are you leading me through here? How do you want me to learn and grow through painful and difficult situations? I've been learning from Jesus that sometimes God does bring us through very hard things for the sake of his plans and his purposes. So, yeah, if you've been here for the past few weeks, we're just so thankful that you've been here, though, together with us, learning about what Jesus' death on the cross and his resurrection and his life actually mean for all of us. But this may be all new to you. You know, right? This might be you're just here with a friend for the very first time joining us at the 180. And if so, we're really glad you're here. And actually, we're going to read from the scriptures about some people who met Jesus for the very first time. And there's some unique things that come out when people meet Jesus for the very first time. So I'm just going to turn to the Bible, and we're going to look actually in John, which is the writings of John, one of the followers of Jesus, that he wrote down to describe the life of Jesus. So it'll come up on the screen. It says, Now there were some Greeks among those who went up to worship at the festival. They came to Philip, who is from Bethsaida in Galilee, with a request. Sir, they said, we would like to see Jesus. Philip went to tell Andrew, and Andrew and Philip, in turn, told Jesus. Jesus replied, the hour has come for the Son of Man to be glorified. So we see here that there's some Greeks that went up to Jerusalem for a festival, and while they're there, they realize there's this new leader in the Jewish community named Jesus, and he seems to be very powerful, very influential, he's very wise, and they're like, hey, we'd love to learn more about this. So they go and find Andrew and Philip and just want to learn more, you know. Now, it's kind of something curious to see that there's Greek people choosing to celebrate a Jewish festival, right? And, you know, we know kind of from context that actually the festival that they're talking about is the festival of Passover, which celebrates the way that generations before, God had been faithful to the people of Israel to rescue them from Egypt. And they could look back centuries and say, you know what, God was faithful then, and he's been faithful all the way through, and he's faithful today, and we're going to trust him with our lives going forward. But yeah, the people that were Greek, right, they're from Greece, and so their story, their backstory of their families, of their ancestors, was totally different, right? The Greeks, within at the time of the Roman Empire, they would have had a huge diversity of different spiritual and religious practices, right? For some of them, there would be a god of just a particular city that they would be really devoted to. Or they have gods for relationships, a god of war, a god of the harvest, and they kind of, whatever circumstance, they would worship that god just to maybe kind of get a benefit. So you have to kind of wonder, what were they doing in Jerusalem? Why would they bother to join in on this religious festival for something that wasn't really part of their story? What is it they want to learn about? You know, it might have been just curiosity, right? Or they just wanted to maybe be good friends and good neighbors, right? They saw that their neighbors are having this great big party, and they're like, we'll join. You know, I don't know if you've ever done that. Have you ever been to like a bar mitzvah or been to an Eid celebration or you know, there's different things. In a city like Montreal, there's pretty diverse different practices. And sometimes friends invite you out and you go and you just want to see and want to learn. And maybe that's why they said, hey, yeah, sure, we'll join on your Passover celebrations. That sounds great. But could it be that maybe because they were coming up to that festival, they were interested maybe in the story of what God was doing in the world? They wanted to see what the faithfulness of God actually looked like, right? What was it that maybe they saw in their neighbors who were walking with God that maybe made them say, I need to understand this better? Because maybe, you know, like we know the Roman Empire was a pretty brutal place, right? There was an emperor that went and a huge army that conquered different places. There was slavery, there was a lot of suffering and inequality. And maybe they just saw in their Jewish neighbors, they saw maybe just a peace or a wisdom in how they went through their lives. Right? They could see that their relationship with God actually helped them kind of navigate the stresses and the worries of life in a way that they wanted to understand better. Or it could be, you know, they just had seen that the faith that was described in the Bible, that it had just stood the test of time, right? It had been around for centuries and centuries. And the Greeks, we know, had a respect for things that had stood the test of time. And so when they maybe were in uncertain circumstances, they wanted to grab onto something that had been around for a long time. We don't fully know, but there was something in the way, in the people of God, the people that were trying to live like Jesus, the people, the Jewish people that were obedient to God, that they said, we want to know more. We want to learn more and experience more of this. And so I don't know if you've ever been in that position where you're like, there's something that I need to go deeper in my life. And I want to get around the people that know more about who God is. I want to get around the people that maybe have a greater wisdom. These people were hungry for wisdom. They're hungry for peace, hungry to see something more. But as they came to Jerusalem, as I mentioned, you know, they heard there was this new teacher, this new rabbi that was a powerful and influential teacher named Jesus. And so they try to, I mean, everything's new to them, but this is especially new. This new teacher, they never would have heard of him from whatever city they were from. There's a man named Jesus, and he's bringing a new teaching. And so they try to find a way to connect with him. And you see, there's interesting detail in the story. They go to Philip, and then Philip connects with Andrew, and then it's Andrew and Philip together go to Jesus. And if you realize this, Philip and Andrew, those are actually kind of, actually Greek kind of names, right? That they were maybe the most, had the most connection with Greek culture or the Greek language or those ideas. And so it's just the most perfectly natural thing that they would seek out someone that kind of knows a bit of who they are to help them connect with Jesus. And actually, you know, that's something that we all kind of have a role in. You know, Philip and Andrew, you know, anybody could come and just listen to Jesus and kind of be curious about what he said, but Philip and Andrew, they were called disciples, right? They really become students of Jesus. And as they became students of Jesus, they started to have a responsibility not just to benefit from it for themselves, but actually be the ones that could actually share that out with others, to help other people make a connection to God through Jesus. And so, Philip and Andrew, they're the ones to help these people that are very far away from maybe any connection with Jesus, to help bring them in to make that connection. You know, and I think it maybe brings us to maybe a realization here. If we look at Philip and Andrew, you know, maybe for each of you, how are you in a position where you can help other people make a connection to God? How are you in a position where you're helping people make a connection to Jesus? You know, I think one of the most typical ways that this happens is just parents with their own kids, right? That as I have kids of my own, and as I'm raising up my kids to learn how to do math and go to school and survive sports and all those other things, I'm also showing them how to navigate life in a way that brings them closer to God. And, you know, we have a kids' own team, and we kind of learn from each other as parents of how we can live our lives so that kids can see who God is. But it might play out, you know, that you have a unique place to speak from because of maybe other reasons. It might be because of your workplace. It might be because of kind of your hobbies or interests that create a connection with other people. You know, depending on your workplace, you know, sometimes every workplace kind of has its own culture, and even every field has its own way of kind of approaching questions. So if you get to know, like, nurses, they have a way of looking at the world, but if you get to know engineers, often they have their own way of putting together facts and evidence, right? Or teachers, you know, and whatever position you are in as yourself, maybe God has put you in that place, so you have a unique way to help answer people's questions, help understand who they are, and then help them journey towards Jesus. So think, you know, what unique places are you in that you can help people connect to Jesus like Andrew and Philip did? You know, I got to say, and it could be that as you're here at the 180, you maybe feel like you're kind of the only person that has the questions that you have. You're the only person that's maybe had the life experience that you've had, right? Whether you're just the life background that you've been through or the things that you've seen, you're like, I don't know if anybody would quite understand who I am. Can I just say, thank you for being here. We're so glad you're here, and we're honored that we get to help you see Jesus a bit better. And, you know, just really brave that you're here. Maybe if you feel like you're here all on your own, but know that as you walk towards Jesus, you're actually helping to create a path that other people can follow on. So it's so important that you're here, and we're so glad that you're learning more about Jesus. So now, after Philip and Andrew go and talk to Jesus, we start to hear what Jesus has to say in response. So we'll continue on in verse 23, and it says, Jesus replies to them, "The hour has come for the Son of Man to be glorified." It's kind of an interesting response, right? That we see this set up that the Greeks come from far away and get connected to Jesus. And it's kind of this moment where Jesus is maybe starting to go viral, right? The people, not just from his little town in Galilee, not just from Jerusalem, which is kind of the center of worship, but from Greece, which is far away. You have to sail or journey a long distance, that people from different countries and nations are starting to come to Jesus. And so we've got to see what Jesus' response is. And Jesus replies, he says, "The hour has come for the Son of Man to be glorified." You know, Jesus, as he lived, he was always aware of how his life and the things that he was doing connected with God's bigger plan, right? So all of the projects and plans that he was working on, he would make his own plans, but always be aware that God was bringing circumstances into his life and God's plan was advancing and he needed to submit and work along with that. And, you know, that's a real indicator of maturity for us, that we can kind of learn that, yeah, it's good to make plans and think ahead for the future and think ahead to the things that we want to do, but we also need to be aware of God's timing. We also have to be aware of when the hour has come to start something different. So Jesus often, he would say, the hour has come, or it's not the time right yet to do something, but in this case, he says, the hour has come, and what we've learned over the past few weeks is that at this point when Jesus says, the hour has come, it's because he's starting to prepare for his own death on the cross in a more urgent and serious way. You know, I think for the people that came to see Jesus, they'd be really shocked and confused to hear that, right? Like, they'd come to say, we want to see Jesus. And Jesus says, yes, you are going to see me, but you're going to see me in a way that you didn't expect and might be challenging to understand. But you're also going to see Jesus in a way that shows his fullness even more. You know, something you've maybe heard us say here at the 180 is that when Jesus goes to the cross, it reveals God in all of his fullness, right? People showed up trying to understand what Jesus was all about, and Jesus says, you are going to see what I'm all about. You are going to see the truth of what I have to say. but maybe in a way you don't expect. And he dives into actually a pretty challenging teaching here that only can really make sense in light of the cross, in light of his own death. So we look ahead to verse 24. Jesus says, "Very truly, I tell you, unless a kernel of wheat falls to the ground and dies, it remains only a single seed. But if it dies, it produces many seeds. Anyone who loves their life will lose it, while anyone who hates their life in this world will keep it for eternal life. Whoever serves me must follow me, and where I am, my servant also will be. My Father will honor the one who serves me." So you see, Jesus, he just gives this image of our life as a seed, and he just makes a really simple point that, you know, if you have a seed, you can keep it in your hand or keep it in a jar on a shelf, and it'll just stay just as a seed. I guess you could grind it up and maybe make one cornflake or one Cheerio and eat it, but it really, it's not going to get any bigger than that. But he says, if you take that seed, and instead of just holding it in your hand, you put it in the ground and bury it, actually, it can grow up and be transformed. It can germinate and grow, become alive, and bear fruit, have multiple of multiple grains and a larger harvest, right? And Jesus invites us to see actually our own lives in that way. Think of how maybe Philip and Andrew would try to explain this to people, of that idea of our lives are like a kernel of wheat that has to somehow die and be transformed in order to be brought to new life. I wonder if you can think of things in your own life that are maybe like a seed, that are maybe like a grain, that, you know what, no matter how tightly you hold on to it or how long you hold on to it, it's never going to grow. But Jesus is asking you to let it go, put it in the ground, and he can bring fruit from it. You know, one of the typical ways that we think about this is through generosity, right? Through our finances, right? If you have money and you hold on to it, it just kind of stays there. It doesn't become anything else. Actually, if you had it in the stock market this past week, it didn't do very good. Everybody over 40 is like, yeah, it didn't. Everyone under 40 is like, I don't have any money anyways. Right? The money, it doesn't do anything if you just hold on to it. But if you're generous with it, if you give towards helping people, it actually can bear a fruit in their lives. It can bring a transformation for them that goes beyond anything you could hold on to. Right? That's maybe a typical way of thinking of it. You know, another thing we could be holding on to sometimes in different ways, we can be holding on to our pride, right? I don't know if you've ever had the experience in your life of winning an argument. And that's happened to me a couple times, not many. But, you know, one thing I learned about winning an argument is that you win an argument, what do you get? What do you get to hold on to after that? You get to say, I was right, and they were wrong. But you know what? If you hold on to that, what do you get? You just get to say, I was right. Right? But Jesus often invites us, okay, let go of your pride, give forgiveness, and see where that relationship can actually grow. Right? That's the way that Jesus leads us. Or even that pride can be turned maybe inwards. I know sometimes in my own life there's been things I've been kind of wrestling through, either just trying to understand better for myself or genuine, like, things I'm not happy with about myself that I want to change. But I've been maybe embarrassed to ask for help, so I've held on to my pride and say, I'm not going to ask for help, I'm just going to figure this out on my own. I hold on to it, and it's so much harder to figure it out on my own rather than say, swallow my pride, humble myself, and say, okay, maybe if I let go of my pride, God can do something new in my life, right? So I ask you again, you know, what sort of things are you holding on to that will never grow, no matter how long or how tightly you hold on to it? You know, there's another aspect here that goes even deeper that would have to be understood carefully as well by the people that were listening to Jesus. Because Jesus doesn't just talk about your life as a seed, but he talks about actually, in some sense, you need to hate your life in order to live. And you have to understand, to a certain degree, Jesus is speaking kind of hyperbolically. He's speaking in an exaggerated kind of way. Because if you use that image of a seed, right, when you're planting a seed, it's not because you just really hate seeds, right? But it's because what you love more is what it can become. And when Jesus tells us and invites us to maybe hate our lives, he's saying, it's not that you just hate every day of your life and you're just miserable all the time, but it's that what you love even more is what maybe God could do in the future. There's also an aspect, you know, there's a lot of leaders sometimes that will talk in this way. Say, you know, you got to make a sacrifice now for glory later, right? You need to You know, sacrifice your finances, sacrifice everything, so that maybe someday you buy my course and you'll grow and you'll develop and then you'll be rich someday. The only thing that ever happens is that the leader becomes rich and his followers stay poor, right? But Jesus isn't saying that. Jesus is saying, no, the way of God is that you surrender and you lay down what you have now, and God can use that for good things. But he's not saying, you need to do this for me. He's saying, I'm going to actually lead the way. I'm going to do this for you and actually show you how it works. I'm going to lead the way on this. So you can see this, that even in this moment where crowds are starting to gather, where Jesus is starting to become famous, where Jesus is starting to have this bigger and bigger influence around him, that's actually the moment where Jesus says, actually, I'm going to let go of this for what God is doing, right? He gives that model for us. He gives up what he has right now for the sake of what God is going to do. And as we continue on in the passage, we get to kind of see actually some of even Jesus' internal thought process, right? That he lets us know actually what he's going through and what he's thinking through in this circumstance. In verse 27, it says, "Now my soul is troubled. And what shall I say? Father, save me from this hour? No, it is for this reason I came to this hour. Father, glorify your name." Then a voice came from heaven. "I have glorified it and will glorify it again." You know, Jesus actually was genuinely troubled as he looked forward to what he was going to go through. He knew that the cross would be a place of pain and suffering, even abandonment that he would experience. And he was genuinely troubled. And I think it's so important for us to see that, because I think sometimes we can have the impression that if we're walking with God, we'll never experience fear, we'll never experience doubt. But Jesus shows us that even he was troubled. It was, in some sense, intimidating what he had to go through. And you know, I think sometimes we can look back at what Jesus has done and it just feels like, oh, life was simple and straightforward because he was God, he was wise, he knew things that we could never know, so it was always simple and straightforward for him. But no, it was genuinely difficult and troubling for him to walk in obedience. And I think, you know, two things. One is that we're going to walk through hard times as well, right? We're going to walk through times where we know what God is calling us to do. We just don't know if we really have the strength to do it. But then the other thing is that you have to realize that Jesus, as he went to the cross, even though it feels like it's history now, it's inevitable, it had to happen, and it just feels like something that couldn't have changed, I actually see that for Jesus, it was a choice, right? That he actually, at this moment, he says, he's troubled and he wants God to find a way to get him out of it, but instead, he says, no, I'm going to trust God and follow in this pathway. I'm going to trust his Father. And the way that Jesus expresses that trust in his Father and his trust in the direction and the plan that God has, he says, "Father, glorify your name." Right? That's a way of saying, Father, or God, show your glory, show your greatness in a way that's personal, show your greatness in a way that everyone can see and understand. And there's actually something really unique that happens because a voice comes down from heaven. It's God speaking, and God says, "I have glorified my name, and I will glorify it again." Whenever I read that, I don't know what voice to read that in, right? If it's God speaking audibly from heaven, how do you, is it a booming voice, you know? And it's hard to understand how is it that it's an incredible miracle that God speaks in such a direct way to everybody. But there's an important reminder here that as God leads us into a new step of surrender or a new step of obedience, he also speaks to us, right? As we step out in obedience, God speaks to us to affirm, to clarify, yes, what you're doing is good and right. And those unique moments are incredibly powerful in our lives, that when God calls us to a new step of sacrifice, whether financially or to make a commitment or to serve in different ways, he also gives an affirmation that this is the will of God for you. It says, going on, the people that were there, it says, the crowd that was there and heard it said it had thundered. Others said an angel had spoken to him. Jesus said, "This voice was for your benefit, not mine." Right? Jesus, from the start, he was already very familiar, intimately aware of what God was doing. So he knew that the step that he was taking was in line with what God wanted. And he knew that God was going to be glorified through what he did. But the reason God spoke wasn't just to encourage Jesus in this hard time. It wasn't just for Jesus. It was actually for everybody around them, that they could hear and see that actually, yeah, God is at work in this really difficult and hard circumstance that Jesus is going through. And that actually kind of shows us a pattern for how God works in our own lives, right? That God invites us to a step of obedience, and we trust him enough to obey, and then God speaks, and God acts in some way. And actually, the benefit doesn't always just flow back to ourselves, but it actually flows to the people around us. As other people are able to see, actually, God is faithful. God is good. It's a model of leadership that Jesus shows, it's a model even or a pattern that we can follow in, that we can choose to trust God, and then when God acts, recognize that it's not just going to benefit us, but it's going to benefit those around us. I wonder if you chose to trust God in 2025, if you chose to trust God this year, who do you think would benefit? Would it just be you, or would it have a benefit for the people that you work with, the people in your family, the people around you? Would they see if God was faithful to all the things that you're asking him for, if God was faithful to all his plans in your life over the upcoming year, would it only benefit you? Or what? Of course, no, it would have a benefit for those around you. They would see something more of who God is. They'd see more of God's character than they ever could. As we conclude, we actually get to see how Jesus describes this path and how it's going to work for him as he puts his own trust in God. See, Jesus then starts talking a bit about the future and what's going to happen next, because he knows what's happening next. In verse 32, it says, "And I, when I am lifted up, will draw all people to myself." And if you're reading in your own Bible, sometimes words are marked in red when it's words that Jesus has said. But John, who's actually the author of this account of Jesus' life, he knew that sometimes you needed to explain what Jesus had said to make sure people could understand, whether the people that are hearing it for the first time or the people that were hearing it like his disciples after several times. But what John explains, he says, when Jesus says that he's going to be lifted up from the earth and draw all people to himself, John explains that Jesus said this to show the kind of death he was going to die. John remembers that when Jesus said this, he was preparing his followers for his own death. And he shows that when Jesus dies, he's going to be lifted up and exalted, and in some way it's going to draw and gather all people, people from, the Jewish people, from Greeks, but people from every nation, every people under the earth is going to be able to see Jesus when he's lifted up. And just as Dave comes up to play some music, I want to reflect on this and what it means that Jesus was lifted up. Because, if you read any studies on this passage, that phrase lifted up actually has some ambiguity to it, right? There's the one side of lifted up that can mean exalted. And Jesus is saying, when I am glorified, when I am exalted, everybody's going to see and it'll draw people to me, right? It'll be something that people will want to see how good he is and worship. But, there's another side to that phrase lifted up where it's maybe that refers to Jesus being lifted up in a way that wasn't pleasant, that he's being lifted up a way he was passive. He's being lifted up actually onto the cross to be helpless and to die for us. And that's maybe a bit harder to understand, because you think of the idea of Jesus being lifted up on the cross, how does that gather people to him? And actually, if you read the accounts of Jesus' death, you know that the people that knew Jesus best, his disciples, his followers, some of his best friends, when they saw Jesus being carried away and then lifted up under the cross to die, that was a moment where they couldn't bear to look at him. The pain and the suffering that Jesus was going through was so intense that they couldn't even bear to look, and many of them either hid or ran away. And it was a super confusing moment of wondering, what if all that we've believed is false? What if God isn't at work in this at all? What if we were wrong about everything? But Jesus tells us that when he's lifted up, he will draw all people to himself. And what happened that is that after Jesus' death, after he rose again from the dead, the disciples started to realize that what Jesus had done at the cross in giving his life, he'd not just given his life for a future plan, but he'd given his life for us. And so that Jesus dying on the cross gives us the best picture of who God is. And because of that, it gathers people to worship him and to want to know him better, to want to know a God who loves us enough to not only have good plans for us, not only have a way of organizing the world, but to know a God who loves us enough to die for us. And you know, and that's what we're doing even down to this day, right? We are gathering together because of what Jesus did on the cross. And it gathers people from all around the world, you know, from ancient Israel to Quebec in 2025. The cross and what Jesus has done on the cross to show his love and to show the glory of God gathers us together. I want to invite you to stand just as I close. As we get to the end of this series on the cross, and especially today, you know, you might be thinking of ways in your own life that you can embrace that attitude of surrender to God's plan, of ways you can embrace treating your life as a seed that God can use to bear fruit in your life and in the world around you. But you know, if you've never considered at all before, I just want you to trust that God teaches us to understand him through the cross. And I pray that just as we close, I just want you to consider how the cross shows us who God really is. That Jesus was willing to surrender his life for you. Let's pray. Jesus, when we think of the things that you have maybe invited us to give up or lay down for you, the things you ask us to let go so that you can do a good work, we're just drawn to you and know that you gave everything for us. And we are so thankful that is the love that you have for us. We're also just amazed at how you can bring life out of death, and we praise you for how God raised you from the dead so that we can also have new life. And I pray that you give us a confidence in the new life that you give us. In your name, amen. Okay. Well, thank you for being with us today. We have a prayer room off to the side if you want to pray with anyone afterwards. I think there might still be some snacks outside. And grab those. And then we'll be back here next week is leading into Holy Week, starting with Palm Sunday and Good Friday, and then right up to Easter. So the dates are up on the screen, and we'd love to see you there. Have a good week.